podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Ironcast, welcome to Rush Green, and welcome to Ironcast, Ginge, one of my childhood heroes. 47 games, 8 goals for West Ham in the famous 92-93 season. But I'm under strict instructions not to talk about your playing days, Mark. We're here to talk about your coaching. Welcome to Ironcast, Mark Robson.
Cheers, Chris. Cheers. Cheers,
welcome, John. Cheers, mate.
Well. I mean, Ginge, we were just chatting before. Robbo was coach. Matty Everington, your friend, said he is the best, one of the best coaches on the grass he's ever seen.
I think you was with Matty at Peterborough, was you, Robbo?
I was, yeah. I was with Matty.
He was 23s.
Matty was doing the 18s, and I came in at Peterborough, and they were talking about doing an under 23 group, and I don't think the connection between both the academy lads and the first team was particularly great for whatever reason. But I watched a few sessions, and I really like Matty as well. I thought him and Simon were doing the team, and I managed to sort of get him across a bit more with the first team. Spoke to Dow and said, look, we should probably introduce him a bit more, which he did. And then he took 23s and he became a part of our staff. So it was a good time.
I was saying to Chris before I spoke to Matty about you and all that over the last couple of weeks, and he says you're one of the best he's seen on the grass. So a compliment from Matty Everton. he doesn't give too many. So it's good.
You've had a storied coaching career, Robbo. And actually it started with another West Ham alumni, Alan Kerbishley. You had quite a few years at Charlton. After you left West Ham as a player, you had 4 years with Charlton, 93 to 97. And then 2000 to 2008, you were with Charlton in what was a golden period for Charlton Athletic. What was it like to have been around the club at that time?
Yeah, it was. So I retired from playing, and Kerbs, he knew I'd been coaching sort of during my playing days. I took a youth team at Averley, which my brother was in, and there was a group that I had from under nines up to under 15s again when I was playing. So I think I was at Tottenham at the start, I was at West Ham. So I was doing these lads coming through, and then I took them as a youth team, and then I retired from playing at Notts County, and there was a job available at Charlton, and Kerbs asked me to come along, and you know, would I be interested? And I said yeah straight away. So I think I was 29 30, I started working at Charlton, and it was a really good time. Obviously in the Premier League, and I think the first season they was up, they went down, they come back up and then stayed up. It was always a bit of a survival with them there. But having said that, I think they finished in the top 10 a couple of times in those 4 or 5 years that I was there as a coach.
Was coaching, maybe management, something you'd always been interested in as a player?
Yeah, absolutely. I started coaching at 18. And again, that was with my younger brother's team, Senrab, who obviously there was a lot of boys that came through Senrab. Yeah, I worked with a lad there, Gary Northrow. He kept asking me. I'd just signed for Tottenham from Exeter, and he said, would I come along and do some sessions? And I sort of, what, training, coaching? Not sure about that, you know. And he kept on and on and on for about 4 or 5 weeks in here. I said, I'll come down and do a session. And I did a session at Langdon Park School, which is sort of Poplar Way. And I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And I kept going, and I just kept going and going. That year, I think I took my first coaching badge, my prelim badge. So I was sort of 19. And it just sort of grew from there, really. I loved the coaching. I really enjoyed it whilst I was playing as well.
They must have seen something in you to be a coach that early on, though, to get into it. Because not many footballers. Yeah. You obviously wanted to be a footballer as well. So you was playing, and you don't see many footballers, you know. Someone's obviously seen something in you. Was it like on the pitch? Were you talkative on the pitch, or was it just something?
Yeah, I was actually. I was quite vocal really. I think I did speak quite a bit, certainly as I got older in my career, the back end of my career. I was very I used to communicate quite a bit, to be fair, but I got hooked on it. I really enjoyed it, and I had a bad knee injury at Tottenham, and it was sort of they said I might not play again at the top level. So I think in the back of my mind, because I'd been coaching at, I think I was 22, 21, then 22, it was something that I'd definitely look to go into sort of further down the line. I had my full license at 26. And yeah, it just seemed a natural sort of pathway for me. And if I'm being honest, probably at the back end of my career, I was looking forward to getting into coaching more so than I was playing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, as a fan, you turn up on match day, you see the boys play, you don't get to see what happens on the training pitch. And I don't really understand it, if I'm honest. So what makes a good coach? Like, what is your daily routine like?
I think trying to get the best out of the player, out of the individual. And then I suppose really from there, you're looking at the team, you know, how can you, you know, what does your team look like? What's your setup, your makeup of your team? And are you getting them, you know, are they all singing on the same hymn sheet, if you like, and performing together as a group, as well as the individual? That for me would probably be what it would look like.
Is there a massive difference from coaching, no disrespect, lower league to top end West Ham players, Premier League, top end of that?
I think the top end, you just got top players who should make more correct decisions, James. You know, I think that's probably, I think the best players are the ones who make the best decisions on the ball. And then I think technically and tactically they've probably got what they need. But I think the decision making is the biggest thing, because if you make the more good decisions and the right decisions you make, if you choose the right pass or make the right option, then the likelihood is you're going to be successful. And I think that's the thing for me, is the decision making around it also. And I think as a coach, you can help with things like that, when to play balls around the corner into people's feet when you know it's on, and when to change the play at the right time, you know, when it needs to be, if you're caught in one side of the pitch, who's bright enough to see if I open up here, I can go out the other side, or, you know, is it one pass, does it take two or three passes? I think that's a big part of the coaching. Trying to make players better, I think, is that would be the ultimate goal.
And what's like, I've gone through your CV, obviously, like it seems a lot through your career, you've gone from academy to first team. Mm-hmm. What are the big differences? Do you feel, I would guess that academy players probably listen a bit more than kind of first team players.
You'd be surprised, like, I bet. Like, I bet you'd be modern day, I bet you'd be surprised.
But what are the big differences? Is it a very different kind of coaching between academy and first team?
I think it probably is, and I think you're probably right. There's probably, with the younger lads, they hang on to every word you're saying, you know, and because they're all desperate to improve and get better. And I think when you're playing with the seniors, you're playing with a lot of players who've played internationally and have made a real career for themselves anyway. So that's not to say that they don't want to learn, because I think there's a thirst for everyone to want to learn, and certainly our first team players, they're I think that was one of the first things I noticed when I came in. They were really keen to pick some new things up, maybe. So it's different, but it's not too different for me. And if I'm being honest, I try to be the same with everyone, really, because I think that's, you know, it's, I am what I am, and I coach the way I coach, and, you know, I want to try and make you better, I want to try and make him better, and I think that's the key for me, for whatever age group it is.
Yeah. Looking through your CV, it's an interesting route to get from Charlton to West Ham, coaching at Gillingham, Peterborough, Barnet, Norwich, England under-17s, Villa, England under-20s, Peterborough again. You arrived back at West Ham in 2021. There's lots of questions I could ask you about that run, but firstly, a personal question I want to ask. Surely you've had a lot of dealings with Barry Fry in amongst all those different clubs.
You could have a pod on his own, Baz, I reckon, can you?
Can I have your best Barry Fry story?
No, you probably
can't. It's
probably
not broadcastable.
No, I'll tell you the best. I'll tell you about pre-season Barry. Sun's out. Beautiful day at the training ground. The lads are running their absolute nuts off and walking around the edge of the training ground. No shirt on, pair of shorts, flip-flops, and a great big cigar. He's Baz on the phone. Doing some wheeling and dealing.
Brilliant.
That's Baz, yeah. Yeah. Most days as well. So, yeah. He's great, 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 great guy.
All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating and review, and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show. Working with England,
yep.
I would say, under 17s we touched on, but under 20 team, you became world champions in 2017.
Well, actually, I worked with the 19s, which won the Euros.
Ah.
So the 20s was the was a little bit, was just before us, actually. That was with Paul Simpson and Andy Edwards. They won the they won the World Cup. And then Keith Downing and myself were the under-19s coaches. And we won the Euros in Georgia, the same, more or less at the same time. I think it was a couple of months later. So, but again, going through the team, there was early on in the early part of the knockout stuff, the elite stuff, was like Trent Alexander-Arnold, Darren Ramsdale, Trevor Chalobah, Jay De Silva, Dujon Sterling. There was Ben Brereton, Ryan Sessegnon. Did I say Trent? I said Trent, didn't I? Yeah, I said Trent. Sam Field, who's I think now Sam's at, is he QPR now? I think Sam. But it was, the group was excellent. Andre Dizel, I think who else was in that group? Oh, Tom Davis at who's now at Sheffield United. Mm. But it was a fantastic group, really. Trotty was our other goalkeeper as well. Nathan Trotty was here. We had a great team, fantastic team. And that was interesting. That was a different type of, when I say different type of coaching, you only had the players for so many days. So each camp was 10 days. But in that camp, you had three games. So you were limited around what you could do. But at the same time, we were really conscious that we had to have them ready for the game. So everything we did was really tactical around just how we played. And actually took a lot of that into sort of coming away from there after. Took a lot of that into my coaching now.
Because there were so many games, like obviously I played international football, was there a lot of stuff done off the grass, meetings and stuff like that? And
yeah,
that's
was,
what
yeah.
I noticed about, sorry to sort of change the subject, that's what I noticed more about coaching and the management towards the end of my career was the amount of meetings and how, you know, tactical stuff on the board, because obviously there's so many games now and not enough time on the grass, I suppose.
Well, it was. I think exactly that. We used to do, so we'd do things like going out to training. So everything was planned. I mean, we had it nailed down to the T. And I have to say, it was one of the good things working with the FA. You get the time to be able to plan because of the gaps in between. So the planning was excellent. And we'd turn up on a Sunday, lads would come in. To be fair, me and Keith used to get them out the first night there. They used to do a training session, but we'd link it always to what it might look like in the games that we were playing. So whether it be a keep ball, whether it be a small-sided game or some finishing, it'll all be linked around what it might look like for us maybe in our first or second games. But we'd do, before training on the Monday, video in the dressing room, around the opposition, couple bits around this, a couple bits around that. So we'd probably do on the Monday would be out of possession, all out of possession stuff with Keith. So we would have that, he'd have them, you know, what it looked like for us out of possession, but what it looked like for the opposition in possession and where we were going to go with it on the training pitch. And then we'd give them some diagrams. We wasn't in there for long, probably 15 minutes tops. We tried to keep the meetings down to a minimum, because obviously if you're having a meeting, another meeting, another meeting, all of a sudden it becomes too much for the players, that, you know. And so we sort of kept them to a real minimum. But it was a part of, because you didn't have the time, it was a good way of giving them more information.
I'm really interested, like all those clubs you played, you coached at, sorry, and working with England as well. So who would you say, was there a player who came through, maybe at academy level, that you saw and you thought, wow? Have you got a few? Well, give us a sense.
Yeah, the England stuff, I have to say, Phil Foden, he came in one session and I was like, oh my God, like he's just unbelievable. It wasn't necessarily, listen, he's got so much ability. It wasn't necessarily that. It was just his desire to, when you lost the ball, he was the first one to go and close it down. He'd done everyone else's work. He was just like phenomenal. He was top lad. And a top lad as well, by the way. Yeah. A really good lad. So, and that was on one session. I think we had him for two camps. And I think the second camp, he got pulled into, if I remember rightly, I think he got pulled into the 21s. And that was it. We didn't see him again.
That's a bit like Deck, though. Were you talking about Phil Foden there? That's what I remember about Deck coming in here when he was young. He was 16, do you know what I mean? It's like, he's still a kid really, but the way, even at that age, he would listen, the way he would demand off senior players' deck at that age, and his work rate, winning the ball back. And I think, you know, the two players you mentioned, arguably, you know, going to be playing for England for the next 10 years. Yeah. That there's something different, I think, you see in players of that quality who've got that desire. Almost a bit old school, I'd say, Rob. I was in deck. I always used to think that I don't like using the word, but used to use with deck a little bit old school, where he had that real hunger to win the ball back, to learn, to keep learning. You know, you see a lot of youngsters nowadays who get to that position and think they've cracked it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And don't try as hard. But with Deck and Robbo's mentioned Phil Foden there, there was something different, and you can see why those boys are, you know, top of the top, and, you know, hopefully there's more to come.
I think as well, is it they got a real win mentality. There's nothing. And I think that's probably, you know, what's ingrained in them as well, where they are, you know, where they've been and you know, the manager that they work with. It's about winning. It is about winning, and they have a desire to win. And it is constant, and that would be whether it's training five a side or whether that's playing penny up the wall or something. Yeah. They have a desire to win, and I think that that is a bit of a throwback. That really,
So, Kevin Keane said the same thing when we had him on Ironcast a few weeks ago. He said that's one thing that sticks out with academy kids is you can tell the ones who really want to win.
Yeah.
Gave Mark Noble as an example as a kid he saw coming through, just had an unbelievable desire. Mm-hmm. Bit of a theme developing there.
I think I was like it in a way, but not on those boys' level. But Nobes was the same and Deck was the same. I can only say that about the boys that I know. We used to train every day how we played. There was no, like, can't do this. No doubt there's players who cannot train. Carlos Tevez, for one, who wouldn't try a leg in training but was phenomenal on a Saturday. The boys you've mentioned, and I'd put myself in that, we trained flat out every day.
Yeah.
And I think certain players can do that, certain players can't. And I think that's the desire to win, whether it's a five-a-side or a keep ball to get 10 passes. I think certain players have that in them, with just whatever you're doing, the desire to win and train flat out and as hard as you can every day.
Yeah.
I think as well, is it there's players that have to do it because they
can't turn it on and
they
off.
They can't turn it on and off. Yeah. They have to, you know, go for it every day and because that's what they're like, both not just on a training day, but in a match day is exactly the same. So
it's interesting. Robbo, you were born in Upton Park, supported West Ham as a kid. How much does it mean to come back in 2021? You had that unbelievable season in 92-93, which I'm not allowed to talk about. But coming back to the club in 2021, walking in here, now you're part of the famous academy, like coming in an academy role.
Yeah.
What did that mean to you? Like, what was that first day like?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I tried to get back here a couple of times when the job became available. And it didn't quite come off. And this time when it did, I was so pleased just to get back here. It was it does mean a great deal to me. It does mean that being here is a big thing.
Yeah.
Not too much travelling either.
I live 10 minutes down the road.
Seeing the names on the list there where you've coached, you know, you've been done the miles in the car, mate.
No, I do. I mean I live in Upminster. I'm around the corner, so that obviously is a big help, but just being here, really, is my dad used to go and watch West Ham. He took me to my first game to West Ham, and you know, it's sort of built from there, really. So to be a part of it now is fantastic for me. You know, something that I sort of always dreamed of when I finished playing. I actually finished playing here, retired. I came back and I started working with the under-9s here with Tony Carr. Said, I'm looking for a coaching role, da, da, da. And he put me in with the under-9s and I loved it. And actually, did a little bit of work I think it was the 13s at that time, and Nobes was in the 13s. Yeah. Mark Noble, he's like Chrissy Cohen, Mark Noble. And anyway, cut long story short, I got offered a role at Charlton about 2 months down the line. Curbs offered me the role at doing the academy. And I did say to Tom, look, is there any chance you could sort of, do a similar thing with me? And he said, there's nothing I'll do at the moment. So I obviously went. So
Made it back in the end.
But I got back and I'm chuffed a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So you came in back in 2021 as under-23s coach. Who were the kind of players you had in your year at that point?
Back here. So when I came in, the group was Adji Alessi, Pierre Ekwa, Armstrong, Oko Flex, Meepo. We had Sonny Perkins, who'd come up through in the summer from the youth team, who was banging goals in for us, which was fantastic. Dan Chester's, Harrison Ashby, who was in goal. That would have been, was that Joe? Was it Joe Annan, I think, was the start, I think. Heggie was the younger one, and Heggie had sort of just got into the 21s team that season, I think. So I had Heggie in goal. Yeah, so that was the group that I started with, yeah.
Yeah. And then from 2021 to 2023, I mean, what success the academy has seen.
Yeah.
And 2023 in particular, obviously. How did you find last year? What did it mean to you to kind of watch all that happen, all those that you
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we sort of made a decision at the start of last season to move up quite a few of the under 18s. So I was sort of nicking players off of Kev. Obviously, we was all in this bit of a plan really around what it looked like. So I was nicking a lot of Kev's boys to play in the 21s and stepping them up to that age group because we felt that they were ready. It left Kev a bit short, but to be fair, some of the boys that were coming through, they done exceptionally well for him as well. So it kept everything ticking along nicely. But they gained a lot of experience, those younger players. And I think we had Lewis Orford, we had Ollie Scholes, Regan, Caelan Casey, who were all 17 playing in the under 21s. And there was games that we knew we'd struggle physically just because we go to Blackburn and we play Blackburn, have a 24-year-old, a 24-year-old, a 24-year-old, a 22-year-old, and then everyone else was either 20 or under or just under, so 19. Mm. So it was always going to be a tough order for us. We knew it'd be a tough season, but the experience that they got from that was twofold really. First one was when I went back into the youth team playing the Youth Cup, they would have hopefully been much better for it. And secondly, this season in the under 21s, because they've had that experience already, which is what we hoped, was that they'll be able to hold their own and be comfortable and be a really good group. And I think the work that Kev and his staff done last year with the under 18s has just flourished into this season with the 21s. And I know they got knocked out of the cup the other night against Wickham, went to the game. It was physically, it was a tough one for them. They're just big, strong men. But they held their own, could have nicked a draw right at the very death, which would have took it to penalties. But they grew into the game, the boys, and we've got some good players. We've got some really good players, and fingers crossed we can get them in and around our first team.
Yeah, so the academy lifting trophies last season, of course, the first team lifting that trophy in Prague. But earlier in the season, the Conference League, SBFC away, and there's a wonderful picture at Chadwell Heath where the academy are based, on the wall of all the youngsters who made their debuts that night. What does it mean to you as a coach when you see a player like those players come make their first team debut? Does it just fill you with pride?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the academy, it's brilliant, isn't it? You know, to see all those boys being involved, and you know, so be it. It was a free game for us, and if it wouldn't have been a free game, then obviously that wouldn't have happened. But to see them all get an opportunity to play and all do so well. Every single one of them was excellent on the night, even the ones who came on, the subs. They all done really well. So, it's brilliant. It's great. It's great for, you know, I keep going back to the academy. It's great for the academy because it shows that we've got, you know, good players. They're being coached the right way. And also, hopefully, it gives the ones down below, you know, a bit of, you know, I've got a chance myself if I can keep doing what I'm doing.
See a pathway through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the success that we all had, the youth team and obviously the first team, it just brought everything together, I think, for that reason with the younger ones coming through. So it was brilliant. It was such a good, few months, wasn't it? You know, watching us win things,
win trophies week after week. Yeah, yeah, I can get used to it.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I think as well, the standout for me was the FA Youth Cup game away at Arsenal, where the West Ham fans packed the whole the back of the goal. I mean, it was as noisy as you like. I mean, what an experience they gave our boys. You know, that was top class.
Was that 4-5-0 or something that night?
It was 6-1.
I remember it was mental.
Some of the goals we scored in that game as well.
Were brilliant. Yeah. Really good. Yeah.
Well, I got to ask you, like when I was, thinking back to when I was a youngster, do you think young players are missing out on like the old reserve football nowadays? Or do you think the 23 sort of is bridging that gap? Or do you think the reserve sort of game, probably similar to you when I was growing up, it was youth team, the old YTS,
yeah,
reserve team, first team.
Yeah.
And I think, looking back at myself, I think I benefited a lot from that reserve sort of league back in the old. Do you think that would be, do you think players are missing out on that a little bit?
Yeah,
now?
I do. I think the EFL trophy, the competition that the boys were in, they played Cheltenham, Newport and Bristol Rovers. And last year they played Cheltenham, Walsall, MK Dons. And so them games are brilliant games, James. They are so good for the young lads. You find out so much about them. So when we went to Walsall last season, and for the last 30 minutes of the game, Walsall just kept on putting in our box. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure about the boys in the air, you know. I found so much out about them, about you know, one boy in particular who just kept heading the ball. And I was like, I did not know you could do that. You know, it's, because you don't really get that in academy football.
Well, because I only say it because academy football, obviously, is all about development of players. Yeah. But when you're playing against the Warsaws in that competition, it's they're in it to win it. Do you know what I mean? They're professional footballers. They're going to play how they play on a Saturday. So I think if you were to look at a player, you'd probably get more from seeing them against a proper professional team.
Yeah, definitely. Them games are priceless for us, for our younger lads. And it's a shame that that's not every week because I'm a bit with you, really. I think that when you play against older players, and you know, it used to be, I mean, when I played, it was like if you weren't in the first team, you played in the reserve team.
You'd go and play in the reserves on a Wednesday,
to get match day fit to get back into the first team again. Mm. So, you know, you'd play alongside like Ray Clements and Paul Walsh and Chris Waddle and Glenn Oddle. And, you know, it was like, that was what it was like. But now it's, you know, that doesn't happen. Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I kind of miss that reserves have gone. Yeah. Remember the sort of reserve games?
I just think it's, like you say, you've got, but going back again, but you, as Wobble says, you had boys who want to get back in the first team, you'd have young lads who were doing really well, and he's sort of all mixed into this reserve team where everyone wants to do well because it's either the youngsters want to get in the first team or the boys who were in the first team can't. So they were always great games, and I probably learned my most stuff playing like the old school reserve football. It was brilliant, loved it, especially as a young lad.
It's a good point, I suppose, that I haven't really thought about. The thing about the academy system is like those young kids are always playing against young kids, and it's, but actually the first team game is a mixed age group, you know, there's a lot of grizzled veterans in that. Well, and those kids not getting the opportunity to play against that.
You could chuck in as well the loan system, the young, like that was, if you was an age, I know when I was growing up, keep going back to my long, long time ago, you'd go out on loan to play against men, I suppose, to earn your stripe sort of thing, you know, and get the old elbow, get the odd tackle. But I think, that sort of died down a little bit in the last few years, in my opinion, is the loan moves and stuff like that as well.
Yeah. No, I think it's the loan stuff. So we've had a couple, I think, one that's gone on.
A couple
on loan,
gone today,
I think. Yeah, and there might be another couple. And really, you know, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, we want them to go and play. But we know how difficult that is because as a manager, you know, if you're not performing, then you're out of the team, etc. Yeah. So, but in terms of going along and playing and training every day with senior players and, you know, some hard, old-headed players as well, you know, that are not going to leave a little bit on you.
Horrible
player. Violent defender.
I used to avoid in trying to stay away.
Stay away from him.
Stand aside. I'll play one touch, get out of the way. I think it's a part of their development that if they're ready, that's, you know, it's going to go. Like Freddie Potts has gone out, he's gone to Wickham. He's done really well. I mean, he's done really well. And so much so that he was out injured for, I think it was about 5-6 weeks. And he's come back straight in the team, played the last three games. You know, he's
brilliant.
That's worked out really well for him. But then you get one or two loans that are not great. Like, so last year we had one or two that went out and didn't play, and a bit of a problem because they're not playing, not really getting any game time. So,
got to get him back, I suppose.
It's a tough one.
So, Robert, you made the transition from academy to the first team. How did that conversation develop? How do you get wind that might be having to make the step up?
So there was an opportunity for me to move on and go to another club in the Premier League as first team coach, and basically the club said no, that you can't go. So that was how it happened, and the manager then said to me, look, he'd lost obviously Paul Nevin and Mark Warburton, and he said, I'd like to bring you in, put you involved with us, with the first team. And I snapped his hands off. Okay, you know, where do you want me to sign, sort of thing. And then, that was how it came about. There was an opportunity for me, but the club said no, and they wanted to keep me, and they wanted to move me with the first team. So
yeah, and obviously being in the first team, working under David Moyes, and just a quick word on the job Moyesy has done for this club. I mean, taking us from relegation contenders to winning our first major trophy in 43 years. What can you tell us about how this club has transformed over these last few years?
Yeah, he's done a great job, hasn't he? When he came back in and took over from where we were to where the club is now, you know, top six, won a trophy in Europe, still in Europe, still, challenging for the top six, and you never know if it goes that well, we could challenge for Champions League, maybe. That's probably a step too far, but you know, he's obviously put us in that position as a club, and you can't underestimate how well he's done and how hard he works. I've worked with a few managers in my time, and he works like you've never known. I mean, he's relentless, and he's done brilliant, and long may it continue.
We had a James Ward-Prowse on the podcast a few weeks ago, and I said, is there anything that surprised you about the new signings? And he mentioned Mo Kudus's strength. And I wondered, what's your observations of Mo in training? What's he like as a competitor?
Well, he's been really good. When he first came in, I think it took him a little bit of time to I wouldn't say settle, just to find his feet in the first team, really.
Sort of way, yeah.
But once he got in, like he's been excellent. I mean, he's been so good. He's really surprised me, and I don't think he's surprised. Johnny Heitinger was really confident about him and about what he was able to do, and what he could bring to the table. And he certainly done it.
Me and Chris have spoke a bit. Obviously, we do this every week. I think the signings have been. I think all of them really have been superb. Have they been good? We're talking about on the training pitch. Me as a player, it's always good to have good lads in the dressing room. They come in, and I can imagine it being a good dressing room to come into anyway. If they've come in and added to the group as well, as in off the pitch, in the dressing room and around.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a real good bunch of lads here. One Premier League manager said it. We don't have no. in our setup, and we've got some top lads, and it's a good group, and I think they're very much together. You can see that, how hard they work for each other, and if we can keep that going, boiling over to the end of the season, then fingers crossed we can have a successful end of season, and don't know where it's going to take us.
There's one other player I want to ask you about, Lucas Paquetá. When you pay your ticket for West Ham, like, he's worth the entrance fee on his own. The things he can do with football, he's so exciting to watch. Do you get that excitement when you're coaching him? Is it because I imagine, it takes a lot of guts to do the things he does in a match. So I imagine when he's got a bit more freedom on the training pitch, he can do stuff that blows your mind. Is it fun to watch him train?
Yeah, he's different class. He blows your mind at times. And he's not coachable. He's a real flair player, and look, he'll probably be the first to say that he's probably a few times in the games he's given it away too cheaply, but the times he gives it away cheaply, there's other times where he's your best creator, and he creates things out of nothing, and some of the things he does are scary. I love watching him. I love working with him. I love watching him play. I love watching him train.
Don't mind a player like that now and then. If he's producing that, it's when they're giving it away all the time. Like I mentioned, Dimitri Payet, you wouldn't mind Dimi or Lucas doing that as long as producing.
Yeah.
Just one of them players, go and do your thing. Because a player like that, you talk about Mavericks and West Ham, have always seemed to have players who've got that flair. Let them go.
Yeah.
And then that's when you if they got no restriction on them, some of the stuff like Dimi done and we've seen with Lucas now, it's unbelievable to have in your team, as long as they're chasing back when they give it away.
If you look at him, he has a right go. There's times where he can't get there because he's maybe out of position or whatever. Mm. But actually, his work ethic's
been superb.
And fair play to him.
Yeah. And I mean, we're recording this in January. What a December you've had. Places you've been, the points you've nicked.
Yeah. Nicked?
Well, not nicked. one with aplomb. But how have you felt? I mean, what a month that was. How did you find experiencing it from the dugout?
Yeah, It was a fantastic month for us in terms of points. And I got to say, the Arsenal game was brilliant because I thought we defended fantastically well. You know, we sort of limited, I thought, Arsenal, who are obviously a very good team in the league.
I said it on the radio, Rob, but I think it's one of the best defensive performances I've seen.
I've got to say, I'm with you on that because I just thought we never gave them an inch, really.
It was one of them games I feel like, sorry to interrupt you there, you feel like they could have been still playing now and they weren't going to score.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Like, just every man done their job, nice and solid, narrow. It was just, honestly, I think it's up there with one of the best defensive performances I've seen.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought it was a really good performance. But also as well, I thought we was actually good on the ball as well. You know, I thought there was opportunities where we end up getting down the other end. I mean, the penalty was a real good example of that, the way we played to get in there. And I just thought the boys were brilliant. And I thought the Tottenham game as well, the Tottenham game was another game that was defensively, we were just so good. And caused them problems at times where we needed to. So probably the most disappointing one was the Brighton game. We probably hung on in the end and they probably should have got more than they did, maybe, if I'm being honest and fair. But to come out of that with a point with a team that we had as well was, you know, we obviously were missing a couple. So it was, it's been a great, December, to be fair. The point tally is fantastic.
And one of the most exciting things about recording Ironcast, Ginge, is the fact we're down here at Rush Green Training Ground, the hub of West Ham activity. And really excitingly for us, you're a little bit delayed getting into this podcast because you were in a recruitment meeting. Now, obviously, there's limits to what I can ask.
I know what it's going to be said. No comment.
Can we get a wink, a thumbs up?
We're looking.
Okay. We're having meetings.
We've got some. Yeah, we're looking, and of course, if I would imagine if the right the right players come up for us, and you know, at the right price, that we'd be interested. So there's going to be, I think there's one or two that are obviously moved on already. There might possibly be one or two as well moving on again. So we might need to recruit again and get one or two new faces in, which would be great for the group and great for the club. So we'll see. Let's see what happens, eh?
That's the headline. We might get some more.
I've still got a couple of pairs of boots in my garage, mate.
You need a violent, horrible defender.
It's a bit harsh. I could play a little bit.
Robbo, thank you so much for your time.
Cheers, one final
question. Like, what's your gut feel for this season? You know, I don't know if you've heard my theory that if you have a look through West Ham seasons, a cup final or a trophy lift is usually followed the season after by more success. 64, we won the FA Cup following year, 65, Cup Winners' Cup. 80, we won the FA Cup. 81, got to the League Cup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 2005, we get the playoff in 2006. Final. So anyway, there's lots of examples through West Ham history.
The problem with that theory is when we won one, the following year we got to the final but lost it.
That does happen occasionally. Occasionally? Hey, hold my hands up on that theory. Well, do you feel that, I don't know, as a fan, I feel like there could be some success at the end of the season.
I think when you look at the squad and you look at when you got your full team out, you know, we've got we've got some strong defenders, but we've also got some really good attackers that score goals. You know, and if you look at our front line, they've been really good this year. So I think most teams that are successful have goal scorers in the team. And, you know, we've got, at the moment, there's three that are banging goals in, or four actually, that are banging goals in every single week. So if we can get them all on the pitch and keep them fit and well, obviously one or two coming back from the African nations, why not? Why not? Why can't we be in that top half of the league, and why can't we have a go at one of the cups for sure?
Yeah. I genuinely don't fear anyone. And there's not many times in sporting West Ham my entire life I've been able to say that, but we can give anyone a game now. And there's not many times we've been able to say that.
And I think that's credit to the club as well and the recruitment and the sort of, not being funny, teams I've played in, teams you've watched, we've majority of the time had a good 11 and then get a few injuries around Christmas and you struggle. But now the players we've brought in, all solid international players who've played in Europe and travelled the world playing football, you know, it is a very exciting time to be a West Ham fan.
Absolutely. Robbo, thank you so much for joining us. I can't wait to have you back to talk about the 92-93 season. It will happen.
That was a great year, by the way. That was a great year.
Robbo, thank you so much. Thank you again,
Jim.
And thank you for listening to this episode of Ironcast. We'll be back next week. But until then, come on, you Irons.
Sports Social Podcast Network.